I'm Kevin, a.k.a. Neon Nazgul from the Operation Pug Podcast, a proud member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual host. Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready, because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
Hello, this is Peter Davison. You're listening to Gallifrey Public Radio.
Welcome to Gallifrey Public Radio, a podcast dedicated to everything in the Doctor Who spectrum. We invite you to join us each week for discussions ranging from Hartnell to Capaldi and beyond. Your GPR staff are Jay Witten.
You see how clever I was there? You make that connection? Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Keir Hansen.
Proactive, reactive, proactive. I'm making up words as I go here.
And Haley Malley.
Hey, that wasn't exactly what I was going to say at all, Jay. Thanks.
Oh, and
spoilers.
We do occasionally discuss recent news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired in their home territories. But don't worry, if we dip too far into the future, we'll give you fair warning.
Welcome to episode 238 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where a single tear never meant so much on so many levels. We're not ready, do you hear us? We're not ready. I am your host, Haley Malley, and with me in the GPR studios this week, dying in the corner, is Jay Witten. How are you today, Jay?
It's okay. I'm going to get that upgrade and get this all taken care of. It'll work out great.
Cyber sinuses.
And already looking a bit like a Cyberman in his chrome headcans is Keir Hansen. How are you today, Keir?
Ooh, the hat. I like the hat. I want to make sure I get the hat when I get the upgrade. Start with the hat. This week, we cross over the event horizon into the final trilogy. Well, if you want to consider it a trilogy, of our adored and revered 12th Doctor. So we spent months leading up to this wondering how we were going to get around to the end of this incredible era. And those wonderings and those suppositions were only intensified by the promise of a return of Missy, which we got, a return of the Mondasian Cybermen, which we have, and even the return of the Harold Saxon Master. So how would it work? And how would it feel to fans both old and new? And how would we ever forgive our showrunner for literally and figuratively tearing our hearts out? I don't even know where to start with this. I'm just going to look at Haley and say, Haley, can you please just apply an emotional response to what you just watched?
Well, see, the problem is Haley had her emotions removed a couple months ago.
Yeah, what are these emotions you speak of?
Oh, she's having an emotion. Quick, I want to get a selfie with you.
I don't know. The first thing that kind of stuck out to me about this episode on the first watch was that this is the second time that Bill has died, you know, under the Doctor's watchful eye. Mm. And does he really, like, can he pull that out again, I guess, is what I was thinking.
Mm. Okay. Or is this actually, we've actually now just seen the loss of Bill, and we're just going to have to deal with it for
yeah, which episode. that doesn't sit right, but.
I don't know. Jay, how did you feel pushing back from this one once the credits rolled?
The first thing I thought was that 90% of this episode was completely predictable. We had seen most everything in the trailers or things like that. So, but then I sat and thought about it and I was like, you know, none of that, with the exception of maybe the reveal at the very end of the, John Sim, none of this really needed, like, it wasn't something that they were hiding, that it was a big reveal. I mean, you kind of got hints along the way that it was probably going to be the Cybermen. Mm-hmm. You know, as soon as Bill wakes up and she's got the lights in her chest, you're like, oh, this isn't going to end well. You know, it was that slow burn that kept it, that didn't need the big reveal at the end. Mm. And I really liked it. And it's left me wondering, I'm like, have they seriously pulled off something amazing by getting rid of the companion without anybody knowing that she was going to leave?
Right.
or is this going to take some serious hand-wavy nonsense in the next episode to get her back to us?
Or if it even is nonsense. I mean, what we've just witnessed was something that on paper wasn't really supposed to work because we thought, well, no, we've already closed the book on Mandas, so we know mm-hmm. what was going on there. And we've been dealing with an alternate Cyberman line for a decade now. So I don't really need to understand how that works. Oh, and then, oh, Two Masters? No, that's never been televised before. So that's, this, whatever this is, it's going to be some sort of strange cut and paste job, but it all worked. I identified John Sim as Razor from about the second time his face was on camera. But I spent the entire episode wondering, is he aware of who he is? Is this a long game? Is this a ruse? Is he somehow brainwashed? I still don't know whether he precedes or succeeds Missy, because that, we still weren't entirely sure on that.
Yeah.
But as it was building up, that became the little jokes he was playing. And when he finally gets face to face with Missy, and he's throwing that dialogue in.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be so self-destructive, kind of thing. I was loving it. And I think Talalé did such an amazing job in shooting this and putting this episode together to honor the script beautifully, to mm-hmm. pace it perfectly, and keep it very, to keep the, I'm gonna call it the temperature of each scene very carefully controlled, In the hospital, in the depths of floor 1056, was 1056, right?
Yes,
I think so.
Okay, yeah. On the 1056 floor, I mean, everything had this feel of the abandoned ward and that sort of thing, and everything had that nice cold slow pace to it. I loved the pseudoscience.
Mm-hmm.
Holy crap! Time travel science, in theory, that actually checks out.
Yeah. That was one of the things that I loved so much about this, because like as soon as Bill gets, sees the screen and she's like, why are they frozen? Like it kind of clicked at that point. I'm like, oh, they're doing black hole stuff. Mm-hmm. Like you've got 4 miles away from the black hole as opposed to like, right there at it. This is brilliant.
See, I picked it up as soon as they showed the clocks, but that's because I was immediately thinking of the Stargate episode where a very, very similar thing happened.
Mm. There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and then obviously everyone who's looking at their replica sonic screwdriver right now, wondering if they're going to release one more edition where it cracks open to have a magic marker inside. Come on.
That was great.
So there's so many gifts in this for current fans and fans who have really kind of have sat there and cataloged everything that's been happening all the way throughout, the Bill relationship, and how she's watching him on the screen painfully slow, but she's still low. It's like the best show on television. Yeah. He's explaining something now.
Spent a month with a raised eyebrow. Of
course. I mean, it speaks volumes to how endeared we've gotten to Bill Potts over the course mm-hmm. of this season. She's just climbing, clawing, scrabbling to the top of the ranks of companions of all time, as far as I'm concerned. And I never would have thought it possible within a single season.
Yeah.
But this is, she's just amazing.
And then I got into that discussion this week. Like somebody asked me, they're like, okay, favorite doctor, favorite companion. And I was like, okay, obviously favorite doctor now is Capaldi. I gave my reasoning for that and everything. And I was like, my favorite companion used to be Donna, but Bill is really winning me over right now.
Yeah.
And that's when I realized, I'm like, out of the entirety of New Who, I'd have to rank it, but like, at least out of New Who, this is my favorite pairing completely. Yeah. And that's saying something for a show that's been, for 10 series running, and the new stuff is the things that I'm most enamored with.
I think I would say the same thing. It's probably my favorite pairing, but I don't know that I would say any of my favorite episodes have been in this season.
Okay.
I can totally see that.
But so you're saying as far as character development.
Yeah, I adore everything they've done with the characters. None of the episodes have been really, bad or anything. I've enjoyed them all, but there hasn't been anything up to this point special that's like that. That's going to be one of my top 10 episodes that I'm going to go back to all the time.
Okay. I have to wonder about this one in particular, though, as being one that I'm going to say, you know what, every time I go back to this one, I feel like I'm going to get something a little bit more out of it, because this was, I was having this conversation a little earlier with some folks that were sort of dissecting the heck out of the episode, and I was just kind of noticing, this is, how many times have we said, this is what Moffat does? I mean, this is his absolute sweet spot.
Yeah.
Emotional, emotional investment, character interpersonal development, and understanding of relationships between characters that he himself has created, so that he can within 5 minutes of screen time, he's got you chuckling at something, gets you to gasp at something on screen, gets you concerned about something you've just seen on screen, gets you angry at something you've just seen on screen, and then leaves you slack jawed at something you just saw on screen, because, and no battle sequences. So that's basically his full house right there. Everything but guns, you know? This is him saying, you know, this has been an incredible ride. I cannot thank the fandom enough for giving me the opportunity to share my love of this show with you and do what I can to honor it and help it grow. And hopefully hand it over in a position where somebody else can do the same sort of demonstration of adoration for the material. And that's, I think that's what I get out of this. I was getting it through the whole episode. You know, when there's things like, you know, Venusian Aikido. There's Moffat doing his little clever classic Who references and drops and so forth, having fun with it. Missy, just amazing throughout, you know, from the opening moments post-opening credits, the whole, you know, we're totally superheroes here to save the day. what does he call you? Companions? Snacks?
I love when she calls them disposables too.
Yeah. Again, that's probably one of those things where they could have just kept going back to her, and every time she was referring to them, she could have given them a different name and just kept digging.
That scene could have gone on for 10 more minutes, and I wouldn't have gotten tired of it.
Wouldn't have complained in the slightest, no. I wonder if that was scripted or if that was just Michelle Gomez going.
I wonder how many lines they had, like, try this, and then they were just in editing, they picked through what they wanted to use.
Yeah. Not to mention the fact that she's such a physical actor. And she puts all the little bits of business in when she realizes she's on camera. She's striking poses and trying to find her good side and so forth. I mean, that's all. I guarantee that's not in the script.
No, oh, yeah.
I actually saw some articles about this. I saw some blog postings and whatnot. And some people playing around with it for a little while. But the whole idea of the Doctor Who name gag and the truth of it. I mean, did you at any moment actually think, holy crap, he's actually going to try and make this stick?
I like that it's going to be something that people are arguing about for at least a year.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I took it as, all right, I see what you're playing with here, because the eye is doing the half wink every time it would come up in the conversation. But still, you know, tell the joke once, twice, three times, maybe. But what was it? It must have been like four or five times they kept coming back to it.
And him not denying it at any point, too. Well, it's like, what else are you going to make the Doctor's name be at this point? Like, no, like, we put his name in the title. We've been telling you for 50 years exactly what his name is.
Yeah. I did wonder a little bit about the whole, for a split second, when he does the psychic imprinting. And says the whole wait for me that haunts her through the remainder of the episode. Mm-hmm. I thought for a half a second that this was going to be something where they were sort of applying the same crimson horror, last thing you see is imprinted on your retinas, kind of just for a moment. And then I thought, well, all right, the doctor gives, you know, throws a line, and they must believe that she's only mostly dead again.
It cauterized the wound as it went through.
Yeah. How did you feel about Bill dealing with the months or potentially, you know, year or so, however long she actually ended up spending on the
bottom? It was definitely years. Over a year, because when they showed her like mopping or whatever in that ward, and then they showed the clock again, that was over a year after.
Yeah, I mean, it was years she was down there. Mm.
Well, that one specifically was like almost right at a year. Then more time passed after that, and I don't think you saw the clock again after that.
I gotta say, I have so much renewed respect for John Sim right now.
Yeah.
his comedic timing. I mean, the whole bit about the tea, I've got good and bad. And, you
know. I loved Razor through the entire thing. And I seriously didn't cotton on until he's sitting there talking to Missy.
Really?
Like, okay. I was just enjoying the hell out of his character. I was like, I love this guy. I want him to stick around. This is brilliant.
They don't let just anybody have this burglar mask. yeah. So that's, and that kind of leads us to, I mean, that reveal was total Scooby-Doo rubber mask pull thing. So, yes.
So classic master.
Yeah.
I mean, that was so, how many times have we seen Delgado do that exact thing?
Sure. I also noticed, though, if you really take a look at Razor as a character, I mean, as far as his general appearance, he looked as if you took Delgado or an Ainsley Master, you know, and let the beard grow. It had the same sort of structure to it,
mm-hmm.
you know, as if he, this was my look for centuries. I'm not going to totally let it go here. I just, right. you know, it happens to get a little scraggly. No, I just don't know what it was that I kind of recognized really early on. I just thought, all right, I'm along for the ride. I already know, you know, how the game ends, but I just want to see it played. I guess the only thing I'm wondering now, well, there's tons of things I'm wondering now, but with regards to that, when he gives a revelation to her, the penny drops in her mind, and then they come into the room to confront the doctor, where is she mentally? In this.
Yeah. They were very careful not to let it play one way or the other. Mm. Like it very easily could have been that she's, you know, she's like, oh, I'm standing over here so that I can get the drop on him when the time is right. Or I'm standing over here because, hey, look, it's me. I'm evil again.
Right.
I did notice, though, like she didn't have like the delight on her face that you usually see when she's enjoying being evil.
Yeah. Well, because it's probably not often that she gets caught speechless by herself.
But that brings up the question, though, of why. I mean, I guess it happens all the time with the Doctor when he runs into his former iterations that he winds up losing his memory of that. Mm. But it seems weird that like she has absolutely no memory of anything with the Mondas Cybermen at all.
Yeah, there's something still to come that must have done something to our Saxon master to. Strike that from his memory or in some way cloud it so he's not cognizant of his own regenerations, because we've often talked about, and they alluded to this both in and out of canon, I don't know how many times, about the dangers of this sort of forward knowledge. I don't know, just there's I am delighting in the sheer pile of questions.
Oh yeah.
And knowing that we've only got really one episode proper to get a lot of answers. But knowing that Moffat is writing both of these, it's not like I was concerned about what we had with our trilogy earlier this season, where it's like, you know, he teased something up and then other writers jump in and say, all right, well, I think I know where you're going with this. Let me take it. And then the story just doesn't quite fit. Or the pace suddenly feels like, you know, I've dropped a few gears or something like that. This is him throughout. So I'm sure he sort of wrote this in its entirety. So
yeah.
I can't imagine it's going to suddenly not work next week.
Well, and what about that cold open, though?
Okay. I mean, well, yeah.
here's the question. Are we getting a preview of the Christmas episode? Because, I mean, if you look, he's got full-on wacky doctor hair. Like, I mean, it was the full bouffant, which was not the case in the rest of the episode. So clearly some time has passed. But, like, could that be a look forward and we actually have three parts that tie together? Or, yeah, is this another pump fake? Or are they doing something amazing and actually throwing in a surprise regeneration that we didn't see coming because they kept saying, hey, look down there. That's where it is. That's where it is. Keep your eye down there. Here it is again.
Yeah. That's
Which would mean they've kept the casting of the new Doctor a secret.
Which wouldn't be that difficult if you keep telling us that it's going to be the Christmas episode. Well, here's a bunch of new people coming onto set. Well, it's probably just a guest star.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, but
we're not going to be looking for the Doctor.
Any big guest stars that are supposed to be in the next episode, like, oh, so and so was seen on the set.
No.
Which but means it
doesn't necessarily have to be a big superstar in order to carry the role. No.
True, and it could have just been one of those things. You know, you bring him into the studio at the dead of night with a coat over his head to film that one scene.
He wore the burglar mask in.
Yeah. You saw from my clever disguise.
Closed set didn't even have to necessarily be shot in Wales. I mean, if they do it, you know, in whatever this snowy backdrop is, wherever that was supposed to be taking place, then who knows? They could have shot it in London. They could have shot it in Spain when they were out there. I mean, it's all closed set. So
I will say that if this is another pump fake, I'm going to be pissed. Because this is twice.
You know what makes me think that this is actually chronologically accurate? Is because his hair was insane.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
That was full Pertwee poof. He's never looked so Pertwee, ever.
This is true.
And it looked actually longer and fuller at the back. Granted, it was kind of wigged out a little bit because of, you know, the windswept effect. But it actually looked longer than it did in the rest of the episode proper. So
yes.
As if it were shot later. So maybe we are getting the first glimpse. But I agree with you. I think it would be amazing if they closed the season out and then said, oh, by the way, join us in Christmas, where you're not getting exactly what you thought you're going to get. We're gonna you know, do one more Happy Holidays with Peter Capaldi and the kids. But it's going to be a flashback or something, you know, or it's just going to be, you know, he gets the final walk-off. So many questions. Before we get to a little thing that I genuinely, which was my like chest clutching moment, I will say I have to give Moffat so much credit for having such a great sequence between Bill and the Doctor about the Doctor reflecting on his childhood with the Master.
Yes.
And explain to her, she was my man crush. And she's like, wait, hold on. You know, and to this moment, we've gone through the entire season, and Bill's still trying to wrap her head around Time Lords.
And she still doesn't know anything about regeneration, so this is all coming out of nowhere for her. She has no idea what the hell he's talking about.
Is she starting to? No, I think she's, at this point, she's starting to kind of get regeneration. It may not have been explicitly talked about, but
But what I'm saying is she's never witnessed a regeneration. So she's going off of assumptions and stuff like that and things that she's gathered.
Yeah.
Well, which has got to be all kinds of weird.
And a fake demonstration.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to look kind of like this.
But not only did he, you know, say that the Master was his man crush, he alluded to the fact that the Doctor has been female before.
Yes. That was part of what I loved here. So, you look at the text here. She was my man crush. I'm sorry. Yeah, I think she was a man back then. I'm fairly sure that I was too. It was a long time ago, though. Her response to this is great. She's like, so you're a bit flexible in the whole man-woman thing? Yeah. And he actually starts pontificating to her. We are the most civilized civilization in the universe. We're billions of years beyond your petty human obsession with gender and its associated stereotypes. I'm like, I can't believe Moffat wrote this. Yeah. But Moffat did write it because she comes cutting back in and says, but you still call yourselves Time Lords.
Yeah, shut up.
He's absolutely firing on all pistons in this episode. I loved so much about it. Somebody was kind of wondering about what this does about some other things that have been sort of treated about sort of pseudo canon, Big Finish. They did a whole spare parts story that had to do with, you know, the origin of the Mondasian Cybermen as a result of atrocities, or not atrocities, but basically blights that were affecting Mondas itself. That actually the Cybermen were starting to be created on the planet proper. As they're, you know, as everything was collapsing and it was their only way to be able to survive. Does this negate that? Does this keep that from being canon and on and on and on? If anybody's really familiar with those stories, my kind of personal take on it is that, and I don't know if firewalk with me on this one. So let's just say that when the species, the inhabitants, the natives of Mondas, regardless of what timeline or what possible thing could have happened with them, whether they were on their native planet or whether it was this colonization that was being sent out within this ship, where they weren't actually the intended colonizers. They were the crew, right? Mm-hmm. They were going to pick up their colonists.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But something about the conditioning of the people, the species of Mondas, that when they end up in one of these dire scenarios, something in their construct, their default is, we've got to save ourselves by replacing components. That just That's what we're going to do. We can't survive in this environment. And as you know, evolution is too slow. So we're going to jump ahead of it cybernetically.
Or you could say, you know, they're leaving their planet because whatever catastrophe is happening there. This is already a technology that's being utilized on the planets for the people they can't get onto the Ark. And then they get onto the Ark and they start having the same issues. And it's like, well, hey, we know how to deal with this.
Mm. Hmm. Yeah. But yeah, but it goes back to that there is there's a viable connection. So both can still be considered to be, workable stories without saying alternate timelines. It actually can still occupy same timeline if you chose to. I always thought it was kind of interesting. This is a tiny little detail, but you know, when we first get the camera pan past the ship, you know, and we're looking into the windows and seeing all the different floors, did it not look almost as if you were looking at the sets of all of the episodes of, you know, there's the Highlands. And there's Fields of Grain as we're heading up towards the planet Nowhere, you know, and the smile bots or the emoji bots and things. For a moment, I thought, holy crap, this entire series has happened on this ship. Could have been.
Well, we've still got another episode to go on this ship. So
there's your big Inception moment.
Yeah, this is all happening in like the next level of the simulation.
The Matrix.
Oh.
Those monks are actually the AI of this ship. That's why they were so powerful.
The monks are Gus. We finally have an answer to Gus.
All right, back in.
Yeah. But yep. So what I was saying about the moment that really kind of nailed me right in the chest was the final tier.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because of how many levels that image works.
Mm-hmm.
And that I think really is a summary, or is at least an encapsulation of Moffat's writing, what he really has intended to do when he is really hitting everything. This is what he's attempting to do. He's attempting to give something that on its surface level is, okay, it's a sad moment. I get it. She's still somewhere within there. She's aware of it, but she can't emotionally express thoroughly. So she's crying within the mask. Okay, got it. No. Well, it's also the fact that that is the origin of the teardrop logo at the eye of the Cybermen. Okay, well, but that kind of ties everything. Okay, well, sure it does. But you can choose to take any of those things or none of those things. But he puts it all out there to say, as many levels of this that you choose to invest in what you've just seen or how you choose to interpret it, I'm giving this out to you to enjoy or disregard at your leisure. That's what I think makes Moffat strongest. And why I think he's stepping away from a pretty impressive legacy.
Yeah, that was pretty insane. I love the heck out of it.
Did you get the you said, Jay, that you kind of had a feeling that she was going to be, you know, obviously when she wakes with the cybernetic heart, that mm-hmm. she was going to be involved in this at some point. But did you really think that she was going to be the first completed Cyberman?
No, I had no, like, I seriously thought it was just going to be, oh, we're going to, you know, somehow get her out of it and she's going to be Iron Man or something in the next episode. But I never thought they were going to actually full blown convert her.
Yeah. She has a striking resemblance to the new Iron Man, doesn't she? I don't know. Haley, did you catch it or did you just kind of figure we had
I kind of thought they would, you know, pull it out at the end. And this happened like hours after I finished watching the episode. Before I rewatched it again, I was like, oh, Moffat did it again. The companion is not just a companion. Like, they have some epic legacy in the world of Who. Like, she's not just a companion. She's also the first Cyberman. And he played it all season long that she's just, you know, another companion. Mm-hmm. But she's not.
Yeah, that's a tremendous tie-in. I think it, even if it does stick, I mean, if this is it, we're done with Bill. And all we get now are maybe, you know, scenes that are from his memory, him reflecting on it. That's just some additional, you know, nothing that's already aired, but it's just additional his moments with Bill that really just made the two of them fire so well together. I think that it's kind of unusual to say, but I think that's a tremendous honor to her.
Yeah.
I know it sounds weird, but you know, to make her, it's like saying, you know, she's literally in the bedrock of this show now.
What if we cut to, like, you know, the first appearance of the Mondasian Cybermen, and she's actually one of the ones that are like banging around the
bunker. That forces the doctor to regenerate, yeah.
Oh, she was the first one to pop through the plastic in the tomb.
I don't know. I mean, it's my go-to explanation has always been if the bad thing of the episode happens to the companion, it means it's totally reversible because it never fails. It's like, oh, the companion got, you know, abducted by the mermaid or, you know, turned into one of the peg dolls or whatever the heck the crazy thing was. If it happens to the companion, it can always be reversed. But this one, I'm not so sure. Like, they built the stakes well enough that it's like, this could stick. And if they do.
Yeah. Well, because, and it was done by the master's careful hand.
Mm-hmm.
That's what makes me think, yeah, this is what better way to stick it to the doctor than to sit there and watch him and know him so well and know his relationships with his pets so well that he could do something of that nature. I love the way that this all folds in on itself. It's yeah. A really, really brilliant sort of tapestry.
I really cannot wait to see how this works out next week.
Yeah.
And if we get another cliffhanger and have to wait until Christmas to get the conclusion of it, I think I'd be okay with that.
You say that now.
Well, I'm going to bitch and complain the entire time, but
yeah. The thing that really makes me wonder about that is the fact that we had that bizarre cold open.
Yeah.
It never gets touched. In
no
any
explanation
way for the remainder of the episode.
Yeah.
So it's like
you don't cut back to it or anything. It's just hanging there. Yeah.
So I honestly do not know whether we're going to get any kind of closure to anything or whether we're going to have a 4-month staring at each other, I don't know what just happened, reaction. But yeah, one way or the other, it's going to be really, really compelling. Whether we get answers, and now it's just a matter of how... What are we waiting for in Christmas? What is the Christmas episode going to be if we've now gotten, you know, 9 out of 10 of these questions answered? You know, or why is it that we've shot a Christmas episode with Capaldi if we've already shown who our 13th Doctor is, if that happens? I love having questions like this.
Well, they haven't shot the Christmas episode yet.
But it's been... But they've had made all the, and I don't think they would actually lie to us that is going to be Capaldi's final episode. Maybe it's one of those things where it's another one of these, your predecessor talks to you from beyond to say, you know,
right.
Learn from me.
Or like you have like a little flashback to something else he did as Capaldi.
Leaves himself a memo. If you're watching this. Yeah.
It's Nardole's new face.
Okay. I like being blue. I should go back to it. All right. I got a little thing I want to wrap up here. Talking about wrapping some things up. There's something we've got to do as well. Okay?
All right. Yep.
So we talked a couple weeks ago as we were leading into Empress of Mars, talking about Gaedis and you know, how we may have seen the last of his writing for the program as well. By the way, we didn't include in the news items, but rumor has it that that Moffat and Gaedis will be working on another venture together. Why not? So they're going to tackle another very familiar franchise. Guess you could say. Do a little research on that one. Find out. You'll be surprised. You'll be surprised. I'll just put it at that. Bleh, bleh. So,
I'm actually excited about that one.
So we had posed out to our listeners to come over and talk to us on Facebook about their sort of reactions on Gaedis's contributions to the show in general. We were going to do a little contest and say we're going to give out some swag if you were sharing your thoughts with us. We do have our winner, as I did say that it was going to be chosen by this weekend. So thanks to our listener Nicole Marie, we are going to make sure that we get your gifts, plural. out there to you. We'll connect with you through Facebook itself to arrange all the logistics of how to get your prize out to you. And thank you very much for sharing on that. The archive of everybody's contributions and thoughts on the Gatiss input or contribution are all there. So read through them. Continue to comment. Keep the conversation going, because it's still, you know, there's quite a legacy of episodes to discuss and reflect on. So please do. We'll probably do something very similar because it's going to be one of our episode topics during the pre-Christmas break, about reflecting on the Moffat era in general. That's going to be a much larger conversation, but we do absolutely want to have your contributions on that discussion as well. So whether we have it on Facebook, on Twitter, on the site, combination of all three, please do. Voicemail. Hey, voicemail's still out there. Want to hear from you too. Like, really hear from you. But yeah, so let's tackle some news. Okay. We failed to mention, we're talking about this episode, that I want to give Nick Briggs huge credit for making the Mondasian Cybermen and their weird speech patterns make more sense now.
Yes.
The speak and spell machines are an interesting take, and I really love his use of the stilted speech that we have come to know and fear so much. We're coming up on, there was a great article and a write-up that Digital Spy did talking about Big Finish Mr. Briggs and Mr. Hay Gallery's work coming up on, they'll be coming into their 20th year of incorporation next year, and reflecting on the fact that they, as fans writing fan stories for fans, has been something that has kept Doctor Who alive and vibrant through the wilderness years, and continue to. So really enjoyable article. We talk about Big Finish constantly. We're huge listeners. So that's just there to enjoy. It's just giving lip service to some really incredible folks. So give them your time, give them your money, buy their albums.
Please do.
I thought I was done talking about the 13th Doctor rumor mill.
Oh, lies.
This isn't really the rumor mill. This is just one actor speaking of another actor, because they're kind of on the inside track with one another in that regard. We've talked about some of the women who had been considered for the role, have been debated. Tilda Swinton on Olivia Colman had always been on some people's very short list, because obviously her work with Chris Chibnall on Broadchurch, her familiarity with a lot of the BBC production team, and her ongoing friendship with David Tennant, who she also shared the screen with in Broadchurch. Tennant himself, though, said he's probably not going to happen. Did you read over his theory as to why?
Yeah, and I mean, he's got good points too, saying that, you know, and he says that she is the hardest working actor on Earth, or the busier than any other actor on Earth, and said I don't think she'd be able to suddenly take 4 years to go to Cardiff. So yeah. I have to agree with him on that. I mean, she is working her ass off. She's appearing in all kinds of things.
Yeah.
So for her to say no, I mean, yes, it is an iconic role, but you really do kind of have to put your life on hold, because it is all consuming.
Yeah, that's true. But it may be one of those things. I mean, I'm not completely closing the door on it, because if you were being offered a role like that, you may say, you know what? This is worth shoving everything else off the table for.
Yeah. Never know. Or she might be that one rare person that, you know, when somebody asks, would you consider being the doctor? She says, no, I don't think that's for me.
Hmm. And we come to find later that she turned down the role when we're talking about this 3 years from now. That's possible.
Yeah.
Let's see, what else have we got? Oh, we figured we'll close out our discussion of World Enough in Time with the theories and the questions that we have. So obviously the talk show circuit, Moffat's now, he's been, you know, much more willing to be in front of the camera now, because he's in the home stretch and he's feeling really good about looking back on all the work that he's done. So he had been doing some late night appearances with Pearl, and I don't know. She's not really helping us know whether we're done.
Yeah. She's speaking in Moffittisms.
She's Moffitt splaining. Much time sitting in a chair next to him, and she's picking up on his bad habits. She's Moffitt splaining. But it just goes to show that they have done such a nice job, such an excellent job of winding us up, that even on casual interviews, we're hanging on every word to try and say, well, the inflection in her voice could mean. So we'll just keep lapping it up. Just keep spilling it on the floor. We'll keep drinking. Mm. That's fine. And then last item I put in here, I'd like to get the both of you, your take on this, because this is what we're kind of alluding to a little bit, is that there is the possibility that we will meet the new Doctor next week, even if it may be potentially kind of a Capaldi eyes across the console kind of thing. The no, sir, all 13 kind of sneak peek. But there is that chance. You wanna put a scale of 1 to 10 on this? Do you wanna put a shiny quarter on this?
Well, now that I'm looking at the image again, you know, it's in a snowy area. So that leads me back to thinking, you know, maybe that is for the Christmas episode where there's gonna be something wintry going on, and it's not for next week. But okay. I trust nothing.
So your scale of 1 to 5, you don't even want to register where it is on the
possibility. I'm going to go with purple.
All right.
It may be wishful thinking, just because I can't count the number of times that I've talked about how much I want a surprise regeneration again. So I'm going to put this up on a 7.
Okay.
I think that there is a good chance. I mean, Moffitt has always enjoyed being clever, outsmarting the fans, putting everything right up in front of him without them ever being able to determine what it is he's doing. And I would love to see him do something on this scale. Now, it's like I said, I think it could very easily be that they're setting it up for the Christmas special, but we have nothing going either way. Like, to this point, we had nothing saying that it was going to tie in or that it was going to happen early. So it's a crapshoot.
It is, yeah. Which is why I'm calling it dead bubble at 5, because I'm trying to keep the wishful thinking contribution out of it. I would agree with you that I'd love to see it happen, simply so it just leaves everyone for 4 months just tearing their hair out, saying, I can't believe they just did that, kind of a, you know, and really, you know, invigorating the fan base like that. But yeah, that's, I don't want to let that play in, but I will say that there are, in my estimation, it is even Steven Moffat that you could choose to do that. That would be his level of clever.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So, or at least just being cognizant. It's like an awareness of, yeah, I see how regenerations in Renewed Who have been, and the way people are reacting about it. So if one of the last things that I can do is flip the desk and really get people chittering, then I'm going to do that. Because I would find it fun as a viewer.
Yeah.
I think that's the kind of person he is. So,
well, we'll see what happens next week.
Yeah.
All right. Next week we will be back with, and this could tie into that very easily, the final episode of series 10, The Doctor Falls. Yeah. So, could it have been set up for us? What
it could be about?
Who knows?
It's a stumble down the stairs. You know, he's just trips.
Yeah.
A little. Oops.
All right. Well, this has been episode 239 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, is burgling mask. Yeah, I have burglary skills.
And this is Kier saying, I am really looking forward to discussing the finale next week with my two co-hosts here, Exposition and Comedy Relief.
And this is Haley saying, excellent. Positive attitude. It will help with the horror to come.
We'll see you guys next week.
I'm Lizzie.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com, tell us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio, or on Facebook @facebook.com/GallifreyPublicRadio. You can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows at 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1GPR. You should also go to gunnageek.com and check out lots of other high-quality geek-centric shows, or visit forums.gunnageek.com to talk about anything geeky with us or the community.
I'll put it to you this way. It's June in South Texas, and I was laying on the couch with two blankets earlier and still complaining about being cold.
Yeah, you're going to die.
Probably.
Nice knowing you.
Can I have your
remember
stuff?
Remember you fondly.
Can I have your action figures?